page 177. Again, I'm going to try to simplify. He talks about symmetry, which is a scientific concept. And, you know, if you've done any kind of chemistry or anything, you can imagine chemical formulas. And apparently some are balanced and some are not balanced. That's the big point. And really he's just using that as a language to talk to Pauli about symmetry in Pauli's own life. That's the point. And which is, you know, his attempt to get through to Pauli on Pauli's own in Pauli's own language, that there should be a balance between the conscious and the unconscious. That's all that is. That's 177. Or 178. Maybe 177, just a couple of quotes. And that indented quote, should be a space there, but if you go up to that quote and go down 1, 2, 3, put 5 lines. Therefore, the left seems to have as much validity as the right. In other words, the unconscious and its, for the most part, unintelligible order becomes the symmetrical counterpart of the conscious mind in its context. See where I am?
No.
It's 178.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. See, the quote starts just.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Thank you. Top, then just count down 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from just. Therefore, the left seems to have as much validity as the right. In other words, the unconscious, in its, for the most part, unintelligible order, becomes the symmetrical counterpart of the conscious mind in its contents.
Well, where is this quote from?
Yes, that's reference.
Not listed?
Should be. Footnote 3. Corrected word 12, paragraph 225.
I'm sorry.
The idea of creating a symmetry would thus indicate some kind of climax in the task of accepting the unconscious and incorporating it in a general picture of the world. The unconscious here displays the cosmic character.
What is he implying when he says it's displaying a cosmic as opposed to the reality of the world?
Remember, he's talking to Pauli. So he always has to kind of walk on eggshells. I think, for me, the basic point here is there is a whole nother way of understanding life. There is another complete point of view in the unconscious. And it is so different from the way we look at life from our rational models. And the reason there is such a disparity is that we're in a time of paradigm shift. There's an old paradigm which we're living by, but there's a new paradigm being formed. And what we need to do is make our conscious life in time reflect the paradigm that's taking shape in the unconscious.
Well, it's good to know sometimes how Jung is using the word, because it wasn't really clear.
Yeah. And he's trying to tell Pauli, you know, your job is to listen to the point of view of the unconscious and express it. Put it out there. To bring a shift in our conscious paradigm to be more like the paradigm in the process of being generated in the unconscious, and that will lead to a balance between these two systems. You know, if he were speaking directly, he'd say, you know, Pauli, get off your butt and start talking about what's in the unconscious. But you can't talk like that to Pauli. So he goes through this kind of long explanation of symmetry, and because that's the way Pauli thinks. In other words, get what's inside outside. That would be putting it very, very, very simply. Because what's outside needs what's inside. There is, I think, a really rich quote at the bottom of page 178. Like, every once in a while, Pali does come out with something that's just brilliant.
I thought this was Von Franck. Oh, he wrote it to me.
Mm-hmm. The Light One has a secret, illegitimate relationship with the devil. That is the psychological parallel to the atom-bomb. Again, I wish we had her dream. She must have dreamt of the A-bomb.
Wow.
And we don't have it. Which you dreamed of. But there is a compensatory counterpart to everything. The now beneficial secret, and in our world, should be our world, correspondingly illegitimate relationship of the phonic anima with the light spiritual master. What's that mean?
The shadow is contaminating the, or inappropriately mixed up with the self?
With?
The shadow isn't separated out, I guess.
No, yes, yes. But what it's mixed up with is the man's erotic fantasy.
To get specific, huh?
You know, I was talking to, I'll give you a name. Doesn't matter. Just, I don't know whether he wants me to say his name or not. But one of the guys that the movers and shaker in building this city, and he said that when they would come up with a plan, like for the mall or whatever, the stadium, the final question on the table would be, now, what's the sexy version of that? What's the sexy version of that?
We're still
wrapped up. See, that's the light anima. The light anima built this city. See what I mean?
What does that mean when you say that in this regard, the sexy anima, the sexy what?
He said, what's the sexy version of that?
Yeah, but what would that mean? Practically?
That there is an eroticism that goes along with what we're building. At least from the man's point of view.
Like, so if you were building the mall out there, what would be sexy about that?
The sleekest.
The sleekest, as most aesthetic. What version?
Technologically advanced.
Appealing to, you know, probably both sexes. But yeah. What would draw people to, what would be appealing and intoxicating?
New. Appealing.
Oh, okay.
iPods are said to be sexy. That's how they build them. Or there's a sexy new computer.
Really behind so much in everything.
So that anima is what, that anima experience of the man is what is shaping our external life.
You say that's light anima at work?
And that's the light anima.
And she's drawing on eroticism?
Well, she is eroticism.
The light anima is
right.
Eroticism.
The light anima is eroticism.
Oh.
Fantasy. Fantasy eroticism.
Oh, the brain.
So you're saying the shadow is mixed up
but
with that.
But that is what the shadow is mixed up with. And Pali got that. That we're being seduced.
He
all of us.
That he was being seduced.
All of us are being seduced.
Well, I mean, but did he realize it? Did he?
I doubt it. He understood it intellectually.
But he didn't work on it.
But he didn't work on it.
No, he didn't work on the atom.
On the
atom bomb, which was that.
He was not seduced by that. That's what's so puzzling.
Again.
Mm-hmm. No, he was not seduced.
Well, I think it's kind of mixed in that he would have worked on it if they had welcomed him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he would have. No.
You don't think so? Whereas there's some right.
No, that's the one thing he did right.
Well, he did it, but it almost seems like if there had been a big push for him to come, he probably would have come.
I bet he would have said no.
You think so?
That's where he really got clear with his boundaries.
Yeah, for some reason.
Are you going to talk more about this? Please?
Yeah, because it's just the first half.
Okay.
That's okay. This is a powerful quote. And, you know, normally we're reading Pelling going, oh my God, there's another piece of BS. But I think this is absolutely accurate. Whether or not he could understand its relevance to his own life is another matter. But his intuition is right. So they see our eros has become deceptive. And just think of sports and advertising. It's all the sexy chick. It's all seduction.
And I think that's what they're asking them to say, okay, what's the sexy version?
Yeah.
What will pull people in? Them in
yeah.
to buy into this,
right.
whether it's taxes or coming
yeah.
or...
Yeah.
The Earth has been operating that way a lot longer than we have.
I'm not so sure.
You don't think so?
What are you
thinking? Well, I was just thinking of the advertising that they have. It has been placed down for less for years. I mean, last 50 years, I can speak of.
That's a good question, Corin. I don't know. The risk of being indiscreet. They're not into boobs.
No, they're into legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they're...
And that might be the difference.
Uh-huh.
See, we are projecting this fantasy of largesse.
Hmm.
And they're not. It's a different fantasy. It might be similar, but it's also different. You never see big boobs on the billboards there.
No, I hadn't thought about
yeah.
the dress.
No.
It's always been large.
And look at their movie stars. None of them are big boob.
Except for Brigitte Bardot.
Well, but I mean, it's of today's world.
Uh-huh.
They're all, and none of them are body beautiful. They're attractive in their own way, but they're not slinky like that. Anyway, let's go to the second part of the quote, by comparison. So there's an illegitimate, so there's a, wait a minute. There's a relationship between the light anima, and I was just trying to give you a sense of what he means by the light anima, and the devil.
And the light anima was fantasy.
Is fantasy eroticism being excited by an object almost as if it's a sexual being? Now, the other side is a corresponding illegitimate relationship of the thonic anima with the light spiritual master. Which, to me, is he's just putting in a very few words what we worked on in Roar Consurgence, that the gateway to the real spirit is through the dark anima. And the gateway to the shadow, the false spirit, is through the light anima.
Hang on. Gateway to the shadow is the light anima.
Right.
And then the gateway to...
To the genuine spirit is the thonic, or the dark anima. And, you know, you can read Thonic Anima, read Sophia.
So why do we call the relationship illegitimate? Then?
Well, because we don't accept it as being valued.
He's not saying from the level of the psyche it's illegitimate. He's saying
from
a conscious
right.
perspective.
Right. I think that's brilliant. You know, I've thought, you know, in light of Freud's work in freeing up sex, has that given the shadow more power or less power? I think more power. Has it made the world better or worse? It's something to think about. Because sex now is so available and so tempting that you forget to ask, where's the value here? It's a commodity. And it's pleasurable, so you buy the commodity and you don't realize the devil's falling behind. And that wasn't a problem when sex was bad. I'm not saying we should go back to sex is bad, but I remember a bumper sticker I saw once that said, remember when sex was dirty and air was clean? Well, it's just another way of framing these issues. But whatever, I don't wish to come down against the light anima, but it does, to me, it shows the importance of the Sophia material. That the genuine spirit now is to be found not in what is dazzling, but in what is difficult. That's what I'd like, you know, that's, to me, it's just another way of framing that thought which we've had before.
Then the light anima is a part of the spirit, right? In some way.
Well, I think so, yet if we take his thought, we got to be careful with it. Not all that glitters is gold, kind of.
I was just wondering, in human spirit.
Yeah, sure.
What role does it play?
Well, it would just be erotic fantasy. Light anima would just be the fantasy of romance.
And that may be good at some time.
And it can lead you astray, because for some reason the way it works is it actually propagates the devil, which you're not aware of unless you take some time to reflect on it.
One of the things I've been wondering about, thinking about, is, you know, I tend to think of it a lot anthropologically, is that when you think about the fact that childbirth and the offshoot from sexual intercourse is really pain for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Is something like that.
That's what I was thinking.
Is something like that brought in by nature so that two people can get over that burden of thinking about that?
Maybe. But whatever it is, it's we found ways to deal with it.
If we didn't have something like that, maybe people would say, well, we don't need to have
that. I doubt it.
because of the pain. You know, and you might get
I don't know.
Involved in some other.
But in any case, we have freed ourselves from that.
Yeah.
Constraint.
But for a long time, that wasn't available. Right. Yeah.
That's what I want to.
I mean.
Yeah.
It gets kind of confusing in my head because when I think of Sophia, she comes through eroticism too.
Right.
And if that was the
right.
You know, she was sensing him as erotic.
Right.
So it wasn't. Where do you see this?
Yeah, it's a fine line.
Both use
Well, could we say that right now that's how she's operating, or how our relationship is to the?
See, I think with Sophia, there's always tragedy. Well, or. It's always a dark experience. There's heartache, confusion. Now, maybe not ultimately, but part of it is, remember at the beginning, he was overwhelmed. It was black, and there was the image of the prison, and the flood, and creepy crawling critters, and so on.
Well, if you read Wisdom, I mean, says that man will be tempted, you know, castrated, destroyed, but
yeah.
you know, ultimately, if he goes through this,
yeah.
I will bring you joy
yeah.
beyond measure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that.
Right. And I don't think with the light anima you have necessarily have to have that. What's it connected to? Exactly, exactly. I mean, I think that's the point, that you discriminate it. And we don't. You know, we don't discriminate it. Certainly collective consciousness doesn't. I mean, look at the pacemates. See what I mean? It's just, that's what draws an atmosphere around the whole event. The cheerleaders and, you know, the kind of...
It's getting more and more.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the noise, the emotion,
right.
the confusion,
right.
The hype.
Yeah, hype. Hype is another word for light anima.
I mean, I haven't been to one of those things in a long time, but if you turn on, you know, if you try to watch a game or anything, the broadcasters are screaming and yelling. It's like an emotional experience, but it's not pleasurable.
Without a relationship.
Right, where, you know, what Wagner was trying to do in the opera was a transformative experience. Which took you through all of those emotions and the music and the everything that was going on, the words and everything. But this stuff is just all the hype and the emotional experience, and then you're just exhausted because it's not connected to you.
It's like carbohydrates.
It's like our what?
Carbohydrates.
Oh, the bad ones.
White bread. Anyway, I don't, you know, don't get too hung up on that quote, but I thought it was interesting the way he did show that the real spirit somehow is connected with the dark anima, the phonic anima. And maybe all that the light anima brings isn't connected to the spirit, and part of it is how the way it's working is how the shadow has so much power. Yeah, right. She was definitely the phonic.
That's really good, Gary. I don't think I would ever have gotten that out of that statement.
Yeah, I that moved me, that statement. Okay, so I think that's the basic point. One, symmetry, reflecting the reflection between the unconscious and the conscious. Nothing new. It's just Jung trying to put it tactfully to Pauli. 179, 180.
Just a little... statement
yeah.
about the last sentence, last paragraph on 179.
Yeah.
He states that, was it in the computation of pi or something? In this unending row, there is no given systematic pattern. Every new digit has a value which cannot be known in advance.
Right.
Not true.
It's not true?
No, because Daniel Tammet can do it.
Can do it, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's. That says something. You know, he's saying it's unpredictable, but and yet he says it's part of a creative background. So if it's part of a creative background, it seems like it must have some sort of pattern. I understand his...
Well, see, he bored me all these pages.
Oh, so you didn't even really pay attention.
I didn't even pay attention. Sorry.
That's
there,
okay.
There is one thing, being from the cancer background, I found a movement in the sense that based on what you were talking about in that workshop and on the alchemy in terms of that the spirit is impregnated in matter.
Yeah.
In that in chemistry you find that the whole Mother Nature is built up on that tetrahedron carbon and that it brings into the forefront the whole thing that two molecules can be have mirror symmetry, like your hands, and that you cannot match up your hands. And chemistry explodes
from
based
that,
on that
on
idea.
That fact, yeah.
And so that was prepare moves and discussion.
Yeah. Well, there again, what Jung is trying to do is speak to Pali in that language.
Yeah.
Just like two molecules can have mirror symmetry, so should your conscious and unconscious.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So is that what, when it says that means that infinity is touched by two diagonals that cross each other in the middle?
Where is that?
That's on the last paragraph about the
second. One, page 179.
Yeah.
Where is it, Mary? Oh, that means that infinity is touched by two diagonals. Yeah.
That's the square.
Where are we now?
But I'm thinking about that more psychologically.
Oh.
Well, here he goes back to remember the dream, the star and the square, and the two diagonals crossing. Remember that. And for me, you can save yourself a lot of trouble. And just remember what von Franz said, that it's the issue of being static or dynamic. And yes, dynamic means that you're open to that imaginal dimension, which is a type of infinity. That's the unknown, unquantifiable, unpredictable.
I disagree with the unpredictableness.
Okay. Oh, okay, well, okay. It's quasi-unpredictable.
And if it isn't the idea of the unus mundus, then it seems like it's not predictable is the wrong word to use.
Yeah, bad choice of words. Systematizable.
And in other words, there's a larger pattern.
Can't be controlled. See, Pali's trying to put everything in a box. And they're just trying to contrast that living means being open to these chance events. Like somebody crossing your path, you wish they hadn't, but they did, and you're attracted to them. And for him, he can't deal with that. So for him, life is rigid. And what von Franz was saying, or what we're saying out of this dream of the six-sided star and the square, is that Pali, life is moments where things happen. And you got to bend to them. And he won't bend to them. He wants that life to be what he thinks it should be. And yet his feelings are operating totally differently because of this chance, quote-unquote, chance encounter. So he needs to be fluid and not controlling. And another way, that's just another way of saying you have to let in the imaginal dimension. The imaginal dimension is whatever it is behind these moments that things cross your path and change your life for good or ill, but you know if you let them go, you'll regret it. You may regret it if you don't let them go, but you'll regret it more if you do let them go.
How can he be so smart and not figure that out?
How can he be so smart and not figure that out? Yeah. And I'll tell you what really scares me is the way he was idealized. How could such a jerk be so idealized? That think about that for a while. And von Franz is the only lone voice saying he is not so great. I think that took guts. I mean, there's a whole... Even now, I got a hold of a video of about Pali's life, and they interviewed people who knew him. And, I mean, they just... He's God, you know. And it's usually one saying, the guy was 2 years old. What are you talking about?
Well, the reason is it was me so idolized, and I actually ordered it because I wanted to see what he did.
Uh-huh.
But in high school, he analyzed Einstein's relativity, mm-hmm. and Einstein said mm-hmm. that was one of the best formulations of his
work. Yeah.
And you know, people talk about there's only a handful of people mm-hmm. knowing, understanding Einstein's theories, and he fairly understood it as a high school student without being taught about it.
He was mentally brilliant.
No, I'm just saying that's why he was mm-hmm. idolized, just in that one sense.
Yeah. I think some of this we can skip, because 179 is more of the same, and he goes way off. 24 possibilities, don't need it.
On 180, when they talk about how the dynamic of the pyramid
yes.
works, are we supposed to be able to back an eye on? Is that where he explains
yes.
how those movements occur?
Yes.
And it's the same dance that he shows in Ion that
yes.
Hallie is talking about?
Yes.
Okay. So if we want to know how the dance actually works, we can read Ion.
Well, in Ion, remember, Jung made a series of four diagrams of how the self evolves. And I don't think we need to go into all the details, but he was just trying to... Let me start. Back up a second. When you dream of the self, you can dream of... You often dream of four. Ah. No. You can have four rocks. You can have four chipmunks. You can have four lions. You can have four presidents. You can have four angels. You can have four diamonds. And Jung simply sat down in Ion and said, what's the difference in those dreams when it's four lions or four rocks or four angels? And he drew up a schema that, again, this is dangerous if you take it too literally, but you can imagine some sort of evolution between your first encounter with the self being in a very basic level, being symbolized by four inanimate objects. As you become more conscious of the self, those inanimate objects will become animate objects, animals. As you become still more conscious, those four animals will become four people. And as you become still more conscious, those four people will become four sacred beings. So all he's doing is just showing how the self evolves over time through multiples of four. But the point there, see, is it evolves. Inanimate, and then plant.
Oh, plant.
And I think in an animal, then human, then divine, and then inanimate again, but diamond and gold, so that it loops back around. So the four rocks, say, would come up when you're in a situation in life that you're being assaulted by desire. The rock would be the hard, concrete fact of your instinctual experience. Well, see, that's where Pali is. He's physically attracted to our thoughts. Now, if you can accept that, it will evolve over time, and those four rocks might become four plants, meaning that you will become more conscious of what was contained in that experience. So the thonic nature of the experience will change and become more less powerfully emotional and more of an insight and a recognition of a change in identity. Does that make sense? But again, the key there is that these things evolve. You see, it's not static, it's dynamic. So that's why he's going into all this stuff about 24 and 6 and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think you need to know all that. All you need to know is that this thing changes. And that Pali doesn't want it to change. He doesn't want to accept it in the first place. And he doesn't want to enter into a living relationship with his emotions that would set him on the path of growing through his passion. Growing through passion is one way of saying it. Another way of saying it is the level of self-manifestation evolves over time. Two different ways of saying the same thing. And that's what. And the fact that six-sided star was static and the square dynamic just points up Pali's selfhood will not develop through this experience if he can't soften up and stop trying to control it. And he's met something bigger than he is, and he's trying to control it. And it's going to kill him. We'll see it coming up shortly. the Sophia is going to turn into a poisonous snake. Because he won't allow the dynamism in her to work on him.
So Sophia is mostly, the snake is mostly image-wise associated with Sophia.
Well, what's so relevant is that it's a poisonous snake.
Oh.
And I say, I think the snake is connected with Sophia because of her earthy roots. Mm-hmm. So I think you can save yourself a lot of trouble with all those details. Page 181, that second paragraph that starts with "for Pali," you know, I'm just trying to give you the essence of this argument. If you count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the object must submit to a movement. That's the point. 181, the second paragraph, count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The object must submit to a movement. See what I mean? Submit. Be moved, not move. Six-sided star is to move things. The square with the diagonals and the irrational is to be moved. That's what he does in point. I think that's all we need to know.
Second. The difference between star and...
Star is to move things, make things happen, and the square is to be moved by events.
So in green, those two things come,
yeah.
What would be the difference? What would be the difference in the import?
The star would be trying to control the relationship. The square would be letting the relationship affect it.
And why is that for the stars?
And because of the irrational measurements within the square.
Oh, I see the irrational
part. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think just flat out, didn't the woman said, you're too rigid here, look at it this way. I think she said that.
One of the things I was thinking of, when you have the square moving, it, in your mind you could see the circle being formed.
Yeah.
Which is a unit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, another point he makes is how Pali flip-flopped between his views on astrology. Remember that? That's classic Pali. Now, I finally found the quote I've been looking for in response to his statement. Page 181, finally it remains. See where I am? Now they're back at the piano lesson again. Finally it remains, because there's a relationship between the static star in the dream and the static end of the piano lesson. That's why he's returning to the piano lesson. With the dance in the square, the issue is a Finally, it remains. Finally, it remains to be emphasized that with the dance in the square, there is a comparison. There is, in comparison to the piano lesson, an important step that has been reached. I don't think a step has been reached. An image has been presented, but it hasn't even begun to be reached. And I think it's just the same. I found what von Franz, I think I mentioned several times I looked for it, I finally found it. What she said about the piano lesson.
What are you looking in there?
This is an essay, Wolfgang Pauli, The Feminine and the Perils of the Modern World. photocopied from somewhere. Wait a minute, where is it from? Well, from somewhere. I think it's I'll check. I think it's from
It's Urquhart.
Psychological Perspectives. It's an interview with her. And she says, the piano lesson is, in contrast to what Mr. Van Erkelens has said, not a solution. Pally returns to pure worldliness. Yanima sadly plays a melody on the piano, left alone instead of in a relationship. The ring he is offering me there, so to speak, is suspended in the air, and the master, whom we would call the self, disappears. So the piano lesson ends very disappointingly. It makes me sad. Like the whole thing makes me sad. If you want me to sum up the relationship, I tried to pull him out and didn't succeed. So I think that's the end of the piano lesson, and I don't see any shift really in this dream, other than the possibility. But where he's really living is in that six-sided star, in that rigidity.
So he's saying the important step is during the dance in the square, not the piano lesson.
Right. And I agree there's a development of the imagery, but I don't think Pally took it up. And I, you know, can you just feel the difference in feeling tone between her and him? That's a puer, and she's a woman. Much different. He's all excited about imagery. So what? Here is the result of it. A woman who's sad. That's the litmus test.
Well, and it's the irony, he used the word reach, and that's the one thing Pally didn't do. He didn't
right.
reach for the
ring. Right, 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 right. Anyway, a couple of just good one-liners. Bottom 181, the synchronicity hypothesis is also, as von Franz says in a lecture, a checkmate for the power drive of the scientific intellect. I just like that.
That's a very big statement.
Right? That's a beautiful statement, I think. Uh, 182, they talk again about her dreams of the atom bomb. We don't have them. I don't know where to go from there. If I ever get to talk with Darrell Sharp sometime, I will see if he can find out if they're in existence, because he's friends with the guy who is the executor of her estate. But I do better with him one-on-one than email and stuff. So,
is there any I haven't read much where it analyzes her dreams and so forth at all?
No. That volume, which I passed around, is probably the only place you'll really find out about her. Yeah, her sister wrote a little biographical essay, and there's just a bunch of essays about her. You really have to kind of piece it together. But I sure like to see those dreams. Okay, now we get back to serious business again. For me, this was just wasn't all that powerful. But we're going to see now the dream that maybe we won't get to it today. Well, I'll set the stage and we'll pick up with it. We're on 183 now. The dream isn't to 186, but he starts laying the groundwork. First thing, let's just take stock. Pally has basically bolted from the piano lesson. He has had a dream warning him of his rigidity. He has a dream of Sophia asking him to play chess. That was the last big one we talked about, which we talked about chess as recognition on earth of the pattern of fate in heaven. All of these challenges to him from the inside, he has ignored. So the unconscious is going to strike back. And we're going to see that in the next dreams. So that what started out as a positive opportunity, Sophia, turns negative when it's rejected. It's like the unconscious will give you a gift, and if you don't receive it, then it will turn that gift to poison. It just doesn't forget about what it's got to give you. It doesn't go from positive to neutral, it goes from positive to negative. Maybe we'll stop, but just let me just mention 183. What we're going to pick up with now is the old Schopenhauer again, and the Pali not wanting to see that there's anything to this idea of the consciousness of God. Which, if you internalize that, means his own, denying that there's a possibility of his own consciousness. But, so we're sort of now turning a corner to heading down to the end of a man, you know, on his fall. Not externally, but internally. He's like those Greek heroes, you know, who slowly work towards their downfall. Again, the value of it is, I think, we can see how the unconscious will continue to try to get through to him. And we do have more imagery than of this whole problem of the attitude that he is being asked to understand and communicate. So that we can learn from it, even though it's sad. And that takes us to 183, which maybe it's a good place to stop. So, you finished that chapter. Read the next chapter, chapter 17. There again, some of it I'm going to go fast because I think we don't need all those words. And so don't worry if you don't get everything. Just try to get the general idea. And I'll try to pick up the essence of the arguments so that we don't get lost in the details. Let's see, what page is that?
201.
And think about what you'd like to do if you want to continue. Probably, I doubt whether we'll get through with this. We may just finish it, what is it, April? We have three more meetings probably. We probably won't get through with it. But we'll probably, if you want to continue in the fall, we'll probably take one or two meetings to finish this in the fall. It's kind of bad. It'd be nice if we could finish it, but then we can kind of sum up and start afresh and just finish it. And then see if you want to continue what you want to do.
So you said three more meetings. Are you towards the end of May?
Yeah. Let's see. But I think we generally stop. I think Memorial Day is early, isn't it, this year? It's 26th or something. 20, yeah. So we'll finish before that. And we need a break, I think. And pick up after Labor Day. Yeah. Yeah, well, just say, I think, does anyone have a calendar? Three more times would be, when would that be? Today's what, the 4th? 5th? 5th, so it'd be the 19th.
That's the name down there.
19th.
Did we skip the 3rd?
Well, okay, 19th and the 3rd. 19th, 3rd, 17th, and then next time would be after Memorial.
Where is the 31st? Because Memorial Day will be the 28th.
It's up to you guys. You want to meet then or not?
No.
No?
I know I'm going to be away.
Oh. One no. Let's see if we can finish it. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so tell them that our last meeting will be the 31st of May.
And I might make it.
Okay.